Monday, the 22nd of April. The location is a valley to the northwest of Huntsville called Lomond. It's dusk, which is probably why you can hear some great birds. Anyway, this is a ramble in more ways than one. I decided earlier that I'm no longer going to take any shit from my mother whilst I'm under the same roof as her. 90% of how much she talks about comes out as gossip, as the spewings of a overactive female mind. Not to be mistaken for the bird song that you can hear in the background this evening, which of course is for a different purpose altogether, and altogether rather more melodious. Now, what do I mean by this? And am I being sexist? I'd say, first of all, sexism is a load of nonsense, just as feminism is a load of nonsense. Everyone, that means each and every single one of the so-called or estimated 7 billion on this planet is having his own unique experience. So why seek equality when you've got individuality? The two don't go. One is anathema to the other. Anyway, I thought I'd just share this because right now I'm walking down this road. There's no one else about. It's dusk. And everything's slightly damp from the rains of earlier. But also everything's incredibly lush and green and verdant, as you'd expect in spring. There are daffodils poking out here and there. The trees are just beginning to come into leaf. And there is, above all else, a magnificent aroma of different plants as I pass them. Honeysuckle, rose bushes, even the fir trees can be smelled on this evening. And all in all, I have to say, it is a joy to be alive right now. Over to my right, there's one of the three reservoirs that feeds Longwood. And above there, to the south-west, we have the place known as Scapegoat Hill. Interesting name. So to get back to my mother, no longer am I going to be the scapegoat for her erroneous claims. And I know that sounds a bit sort of legalese. But I'm trying to express myself as succinctly as possible here. She said to me earlier, right, here's one example, a small example of her nonsense. She said to me the other week that she'd always endeavour to treat my sister and me equally. Now, the answer to that was, well, evidently you didn't try hard enough, because if you had, my sister would have been circumcised at the age, well, she'd have been circumcised before she was 9 months old. And when I say circumcised, I mean she'd have had a clitoris cut off. In the same way that she thought it was a good idea to have her 8-month-old baby son's foreskin chopped off. So it doesn't really matter, this is the point, it doesn't really matter what she thinks, what she believes, or how she sees things, because the facts are the facts. The truth is the truth. And if she's going to claim that she treated her two offspring equally, then she would have them both circumcised. End of story. Genital mutilation, of course, is not something that is confined to women or young girls. There is a joke about this, of course. And I'll just wait for this car to pass before I reveal it. Yeah, because I'm feeling light, it's good to be light-hearted, so I'll make light of the situation. A friend of mine once said to me when I told him that I'd been circumcised as a baby, that it would appear that the doctor has thrown away the wrong piece. I like that joke. It's dark. And it's appropriate, as I'm now passing a dilapidated, leaf-strewn, branch-laden, overgrown graveyard, which is in fact locked up. I'll rattle the gates. There's a blackbird. You can hear the gates rattle there. You can hear the blackbird tweeting merrily. So where was I? Oh yeah. Nonsense. I'm at that point, right? And this time, this year, is the 50th year of this current incarnation on this planet. Now, I have to say, when a man gets to that point where he's got more years behind him than more years ahead of him, he starts to be a little bit pragmatic in regard to his own future and, you know, his own mortality. So right now, to be back in this place whence I lived 30 years ago is rather interesting, because it brings back a lot of memories and a lot of sensations. And just this evening, for instance, walking along, picking up the smell of the various plants, as you know, it was one of those evenings where I thought I ought to get out, because after a day's rain it suddenly cleared up and I knew that the ions in the atmosphere were going to be suitably charged. And you know, as soon as I stepped out of the door, that was the case. I am, one might say, suitably charged. And I am also back at the place of one's birth, one's origins, the place where one spent one's formative years. So as I'm walking along here, we're coming, I can now see the other reservoir. There are three reservoirs that feed the village of Longwood, which is a former place where they used to spin wool. There's a few of the factories, mills left standing, but the one I'm looking at now has been converted into flats, interestingly enough. In the distance, I can see the moor known as Home Moss, and upon that there's a radio mast with its six red lights flickering in the early evening. I can see an old chimney connected to one of the mills, and beyond, down the valley and across, there's a pub that I used to go and call the Walker Arms. Now, behind me, there's a pub called the Dusty Miller, which is looking very tempting right now, because it's got a sign that suggests that it has its own beer. I've always been a fan, being brought up in these parts, of real beer. In fact, I used to brew it myself. I was having a conversation with a friend earlier about the benefits of brewing one's own beer, and he was telling me he used to charge his mates 50p a pint, which I thought was hilarious. Hi. That was about 30 years ago. So I wonder if at some point it'd be a good idea to start, when I've got the space, to start brewing again. Anyway, I'm just going to perch here while I contemplate the scene before me and think about going in for a pint. Yeah, so as I was saying, 30 years ago I was here, and as one moves one through towards one's half century anniversary on this planet, one starts to contemplate a little bit deeper on the subject of what it's all about. Why is it all about? what the fuck is it all about? Well, I'm not going to attempt to answer that question right now. I'm just going to leave it there hanging, maybe for a future episode. I'm going to resist the temptation on this occasion to go into the Dusty Miller for a pint. We'll continue down the valley. So, another thing is that life does go in circles. History, events, happening, circumstances tend to keep spiraling round in ever expanding and ever decreasing vortices. And with that in mind, it occurs to me that at this age, at this point right now, having undergone the experiences I've gone over the last 5 years, which culminated in the state through the auspices of a company called the Bradford and Bingley, stealing what was, in law and in equity, my house, and evicting me. Now, subsequent to that, all the items that I had, all my stuff, so to speak, was put in storage in another place and has been stolen once again from another house that was stolen by these pirates known as the Bradford and Bingley. And they, to cut a long story short, they skipped it. They dumped it all and I was unable to save a lot of it, and some of these photographs went back, again, went back 30 years or so. Now, I've always been of the view that it's good to shed stuff as one goes along. The clutter is just stuff you don't need. It's heavy. And right now, I think it behoves us to be light. As I pass the Luigi's Pizzeria, a place where you're not going to get light. Rather, you're going to get heavy through dough. Anyway, I'm at that point where I've not got a pot to piss in. Basically, I'm living off donations, which kind of dribble in and out occasionally. And if you'd like to make a contribution to this, you think my efforts are worthwhile, or you're feeling, I'm not a seeking pity, but if you're feeling as though it would be a gesture that's within your means to make, please make a donation. You can go onto the website roguemail.org, and if you scroll down on the right-hand side, you'll see there's a donations bar there. It's set at 25 watt. I'll leave it to you to decide, but it can be extended and it can be decreased. So you choose. Anyway, if you think it's worthwhile, it'll certainly be gratefully received, even if it only goes into a PayPal account from which I struggle to get hold of the cash. Nevertheless, that's an aside, and I've just realised that I'm actually walking a route now that used to be part of the cross-country run that I did as a lad back in, well, 30 years ago. So we'll just take a turn up this cobble street. This is one of the things I like about here. This millstone grit. The terraced houses are tall with many windows because they used to be weavers' cottages, and it was important that they got as much light in as possible. And you've still got all these, like I say, these cobble lanes, these steep lanes, these terraced back gardens, an interesting sort of nooks and alleyways. Yeah, so what was I saying? Oh yeah, I've not got a pot to piss in. Hello there. That's the fact of the matter. Nearly a pot to piss in. But I'm easy with that. You know what I mean? So I'm rather light with it, because it means right now, no fucking agency of the state is coming after me, because, well, first of all, I've renounced my citizenship, and secondly, I've got fuck all for them to take. However, being basic, being skint, being in this position at 49 is somewhat different from be 19 again. And what is different? Well, of course, some might say I'm a lot wealthier. If knowledge is the real currency, and that is the measure of one's true wealth, then I have to say right now, right here, back here, looking at Scared Little Hill, I'm a lot wealthier than when I left 30 years ago. Even though materially, I'm at about the same level. Anyway, I was considering this, contemplating, if you like, the where's, the why's, and the how's of this current situation. And in a landscape like this, which is on the eastern slopes of the Pennines, one is immediately struck with how important shelter is, you know. The weather is it's a northern climate, a northern temperate climate, which has got an added factor in that, you know, there's rain sweeping in from off the hills. There's an old joke around here, and it goes something like this, you know. I was 7 years, I'm not saying it's rainy in West Yorkshire, but I was 7 years old before I realised I could take my anorak off inside. Does that make sense? I'm not sure. Anyway, as I climb this little lane, I see to the south east, a local landmark known as Castle Hill, which is at 1,000 feet, and I'm about level with it now, but it's above the town known as Huddersfield, sometimes known as the town that bought itself. But I'm not going to go into that just now. So, where are we? Where is one right now? And what are one's priorities? Well, in order to answer that question, I had to give it, some perspective. 30 years ago, I fell hook, line and sinker for the old citizenship game. I believed, as a result of the programming, that I was that name. That mister. That first name, that middle name, that surname. Bats just flown overhead. Out for an early evening flight, no doubt, catching some insects. And now, of course, the realization has come to me full on that all of that is an entrapment, because no one is really their name. Just as this place called Longwood isn't really that. Longwood is what it is. It's not the name, Longwood. Just as really I'm not the name Michael, or even Rogue Male. I kind of like the anonymity of it all, because I think it's more truthful. Some people say, you know, it's cowardly to not actually reveal your name in public. You know, when you're putting videos out, podcasts like this, or if you've got a website. Now, I would disagree with that, because I don't think it's a matter of... I think it's actually more realistic not to give your name, because your name isn't you anyway. So if I'm anything, I'm just the timbre of the voice that you're listening to right now. I'm this presence here on Longwood Edge, surrounded by hundreds of orange streetlights down in the valley there, and dark hillsides stretching out in all directions. And with the M62 motorway heading west, back up from where I just walked. So all of these things combine to say, fuck all that. All of that is of no consequence whatsoever. All that is of reality is the here and now. Right here. Right now. However, it is fair to say that I could do with a few quid right now. And this brings me on to the subject of the one eye. The mon eye. Money, as it's perhaps incorrectly pronounced. You see, money is not the flow of currency. It's more the transistor in the system that inhibits that flow. And the system works, whether it was constructed knowingly this way or not is another issue. But the system works on the basis that everyone is operating under the one eye. Look on the back of a dollar bill, you just see exactly what I mean. And the one eye is the mon eye, the money. And without that, you're going to struggle. Such is the nature of the reality that's being constructed through its imposition. Now, 30 years ago, when I left, funnily enough, the place that is now on my left, about 200 yards to my left, a place called Sandynook High School, and Huddersfield New College. When I left there, armed with me various qualifications, I was the naive Jack the Lad. I come back now, as a man. Now, whether or not I'm the wise man remains to be seen, but if wisdom is the application of the knowledge and all the things that one has learned, there goes another bat over my head, then I would say, yeah, I'm wise because I've applied that which I have learned to my circumstances. When I found out the bank was scamming me, I took them on. When I found out the council tax was unlawful, I stopped paying it. When I found that I didn't need a license to be travelling around in my own private motorised transport, I deregistered the vehicle. Now, some people will say, yeah, you did all that, but it didn't work, did it? The car was stolen, two cars were stolen, presumably crushed, although I'm not sure. And a house was also stolen. The home that I had for 16 years. I'm not going to enter that now because the details can be read about on the website under the rogue mortgage heading, which is at the top of the page there. You can just log into it and go into the details of what actually transpired with regard to the mortgage. But the thing is, I don't like being scammed. I've never taken kindly to people deceiving me or having one over on me. If it's happened in the past, I've often thought, well, yeah, fair play. Nice one. Good trick. But you may trick me once, you won't trick me twice. I think that's a good adage. Trick me once, don't trick me twice. Chances are you won't get away with it. So, that's how things are unfolding right now. But I have to say that I find it kind of exhilarating. It's good to be alive right now. I don't know whether that should be, well, I've always had those moments, but it may well be that it's being brought upon by these realizations, which I'm talking about. The realization of the real meaning of money, of its creation, and how it's a tool for enslavement. Whereas I look across at the old school, I realised that it was a scene of a lot of fucking brainwashing and untold amounts of fucking bullying and bullshit. And I wonder, with a little sadness perhaps, how much time my former self spent there being fed lies and distortions. You see, over the last week or so, I've been researching the untold history, the hidden history, particularly of these lands, on the basis that if we can't identify what's happened, it's going to be difficult for us to actually get our bearings as to where we are now in terms of history. That applies, of course, to personal history as well as, I suppose, history of the peoples, various peoples. So anyway, when I went to the school there, I did an A-level in modern European history. Modern European and British history, because I was interested in it, you know. I also chose, 30 years ago, I chose to study economics and English on the basis that, if you read my blog, you'll be able to see how that has in fact stood me in good stead. The 16-year-old that made those choices was in fact a wise young head, because, as it's turned out, those are three areas of concern that have proven to be highly significant: finance, or economics, true history, and the use of language, and its communication through literature. Don't get me wrong, there were some aspects of it that I rather enjoyed. I mean, particularly the English. I had a couple of good teachers. One was Harry Amphlett, who was a little bit like Charles Lawton. I don't know if you remember him. He played Captain Bligh in Mutiny on the Bounty. Rumour had it, he was a bit of a tipper of the old whiskey. He certainly liked his facts. In fact, I'm just trying to recall whether he used to smoke in lessons or not. I can't remember smoking in lessons, but his fingers were nicotine stained, and he had he used to chew copious amounts of gum and frequently nip out to the stock cupboard where rumour had it he kept his whiskey. And anyway, with him we studied some interesting texts, The Merchant of Venice, which is a text I've been revisiting recently. And I also read Far From the Madding Crowd and some poets. And then I went and did English A-level on the basis, of course, that I found the subject came easy to me. I was deeply interested in the ideas and the ways of communicating. And I've always had this admiration for those writers who can express themselves succinctly and poetically simultaneously. And the teacher at the sixth form was a guy called Mr. Gillard. Ian Gillard? Oh, he's called Michael Gillard. I bet both of these guys are dead now. Michael Gillard was, when he must have been about 50, 30 years ago. And he was quite an interesting character. A little bit floppish. He was tall. He was about 6'3". And he dyed his hair. And there was something very sort of flamboyant about him. Almost in a Oscar Wilde kind of way. Anyway, I did enjoy his lessons. And one of the things that I remember is, and I'm looking across at the building now, right here, was that the lessons were at the top of a modernist 1960s building with the windows looking south across these hills, across this landscape that I'm looking at now, albeit in darkness. And, you know, there was something really magical about, you know, on a stormy day, watching the clouds sweep in from the west as we enjoyed Michael Gillard putting on what he thought was a old English accent, reading Chaucer, or, you know, reading through Macbeth. You struggle to find a better location, really, than Mr. Gillard's classroom, with Mr. Gillard himself and his dramatic persona taking you through Macbeth. And this was something that came up earlier, the issue that indeed all the world is a stage. Now, I think that means the man-made world is a stage. The natural world is a more magical and, well, not more magical, it is a more magical and equally mysterious, if not a more mysterious happening. But the world is a stage, certainly, in the sense that if one looks into stagecraft, one begins to appreciate just how much is going on behind the scenes. The modern day equivalent of this, of course, is the television. Now, in order for the production to take place, in order for the viewers, the audience, to see, excuse me, to see what's actually going on, there's a lot of production taking place behind the scenes, involving script writers, makeup artists, lighting, sound engineers, all manner of people. And of course the stage itself is deceptive. You've got curtains, you've got trapdoors, you've got numerous entry and exit points. But all the while, the people on the stage, on the screen, are nothing more, nothing less than actors, spouting someone else's words, scripted words, written for specific purposes, whether it's to persuade, to influence, to argue, to entice, to entrance, to mislead, to disinform. Whatever those words are that are spoken, whatever their effect, they have been written by someone else. Never the actor. And it's the same with the news. I wrote a piece the other week about Gary Lineker, stating that he's, in effect, nothing less than a priest. He's like a priest, a pap. Pap being unpalatable liquid, to put it mildly. Gary Lineker's a priest of pap, in that he sits there, and people hang on his every word without question. He's reading from an autocue. He hasn't even got the gumption between his ears to actually formulate his own sentences. And when that autocue breaks down, you'll see that he just fumbles. And this reminded me of a vicar back in the day, in these parts, called, I think it was Tideswell, Reverend Tideswell. And he was the one that allegedly baptised my baby shelf. And I did go to, when I was in the Scouts, we did have an arrangement to go to these, what they call church parades, and I did sit through a number of his Sunday morning services, and they were always dependent entirely upon the scriptures that he was reading. They were built around the scriptures and the hymns, and he would repeat them in a pretty dull monosyllabic way, but then again he was probably in his late 60s at that time, so he was knocking on a bit, and maybe he didn't quite have the fire in his belly that he'd had in his earlier days. But you always had this sense that everything was scripted, that there was more going on behind the scenes. And this is why, you know, the man-made worlds that we inhabit, all under the one eye, it's important to remember that they are scripted. That it's those behind the scenes that are really calling the shots, so to speak. Which means, you know, the crown, as exemplified by that big set of parasites known as the Windsors, but more accurately known as the Saxe-Coburg Gothas, are very much the brand image of a cadre of hidden forces that are behind the scenes creating all of this illusion. You know, just as William the Bastard came in and violently seized these lands through his mercenaries and then divided it up between his loyal servants, who were often earls and barons, lords and ladies and such like. And it's a game that's been going on for 1,000 years now. But the beauty of it, and this is where the knowledge comes into play, is that once you see through it, once you know how phony it is, once you truly understand the metaphor that whoever Shakespeare was wrote about when he said all the world is a stage, once you see through that, and it was an expression that came to me 30 years ago in this place, I didn't really understand it then, although I sensed it. Now, I've got a complete grasp of it. And largely, it has to be said, because of the internet, because of the spread of information that is now readily accessible to each of us at the click of a mouse button. And that brings about a great sense of at-easeness, shall we say, for want of a better expression. Not comfort. A sense that, you know, thank fuck, finally I know. Finally I grasp it. And it also occurs to me that if one actually is aware of what's going on around, and there are times when one's consciousness will struggle to make sense of it, even in the, you know, particularly in moments where you have to make decisions and you're not quite sure you've got all the information that you need in order to make a good decision, well, sometimes you just got to leave it to your higher self. And obviously at the age of 16, I wasn't sure what I wanted to study. It was suddenly, everything was narrowed down to these three subjects for A-level, which was a difficult task, you know, choosing to drop, say, maths, science and other subjects, just to study these three. I didn't really know what I was doing, but I just went with what I felt was right and what I enjoyed doing and what I was interested in. And, you know, it turned out rather marvellously. And the fruits of that, I'd say, can be seen on my website, roguemail.org. This is the Rogue Mail. This is a ramble cast. A physical ramble along the terrain of the Rogue Mail's childhood years, but also a artistic ramble and a ramble through his current levels of cognition.